You are listening to the San Antonio Zen Center Dharma Talks. The San Antonio Zen Center is supported solely by donation, so that everyone can participate in our offerings and programs, regardless of income. If you are able, please consider making a donation to SAZC through the donation button on our site, sanantoniozen.org, or by visiting paypal.me/sanantoniozen. Thank you for your practice and enjoy the talk.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Marta, and thank you, Sarah, for your patience in us getting set up this morning without Colin here. It's always a little bit of a challenge to remember what to do. But it's great to be here this morning with everyone. Welcome to fall, right? At least the calendar says it's fall. I will be very happy, I think, when the temperature cools down a little bit. Anybody else going to be happy when that happens? Mm-hmm. Problem is, if we link our happiness to the weather, we're going to be disappointed, right? Because it's always changing. So I've been thinking about happiness lately in regards to the weather and other things, and looking at it carefully, what happiness is. Everyone has a different idea of what happiness is and what it means to them, what they need to be happy. And it's something we have to take seriously. Happiness is a serious matter. Colin says, what is it Colin says? Our practice is too important to be taken seriously. So we should have some feeling of happiness or lightness about it. Well, also happiness is a very serious matter in life and in Buddhism in particular. It's so important that the Dalai Lama said that the goal of life is happiness. And I was really shocked when I read this, because we're told not to have a goal in Buddhism. Our practice isn't supposed to have a goal. There's nothing to attain. So I thought, well, that seems like a strange statement. But because all living beings want to live and be happy, it is important. And if you think about it, when it has to do with our actions, our thoughts and our words and our actions, because if we're unhappy and if we're acting out of that unhappiness, we're probably not going to bring much benefit to ourselves and other people. Misery loves company, right? So if I'm miserable, I'm liable to do or say something that will make other people unhappy too. And thinking about people in other parts of the world and in people in previous ages, I'm not sure that people really expected to be happy the way we expect to be happy. Maybe they just wanted to survive. And that still is true. I mean, think of the people who don't even have access to fresh water. They just want water to survive. That's not much to ask. People wanted to have enough food to be able to raise their families in peace without violence and war. It was true in past ages, and it's still true today. But for us, living in the time we do and in the place we do, I think we have expectations that we should be happy and we can be happy. If you look at what we hear, for example, we're told that as Americans, the pursuit of happiness is our birthright. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So politically, you know, we're golden. We should be happy. Our stories and our fairy tales tell us that we're going to live happily ever after. Whatever it takes, when we reach that point, we're going to be happy from then on. And in our popular culture, we hear, don't worry, be happy. Like it's a choice, right? I can just snap my fingers and be happy and not be unhappy anymore. And think about the people in commercials. They're always happy by the end of the commercial. And they get that car, or they use the right soap, or deodorant or whatever. And if they buy whatever is being sold to them, they're going to be happy. So, in many different ways, growing up in the time and place that we do, we have expectations of being happy, I think. And if we're not, then something's wrong. Something's wrong with us. Something's wrong with my family, the people I work with society, with government. There, it's something has to be fixed, right? And if our expectations of happiness aren't met, we might withdraw and just say, oh, you know, I'm never going to be happy. This world is so screwed up. It's against me. We might get angry and lash out. We might turn to harmful habits or substances. But what really happens is that we just end up more unhappy. So that's why I think it's, I've thought about this a lot, and I think it's very important to look at our ideas about happiness coming into Zen practice and our ideas as we're practicing. I know I came to Zen practice thinking, well, you know, I love my husband, I've got a comfortable life, but I should be happier. I'm not just not quite happy enough yet. There's got to be something standing in the way because I should be able to be happy all the time. Okay? That was my expectation. And then starting Buddhist practice, we hear the Four Noble Truths, and we hear that there's a path to the end of suffering. And suffering is just unhappiness, right? So it seems natural to make this assumption that if I come to Zen practice and I practice hard and I practice long and I really try, I'm going to be happy at the end. So that can set up some very unrealistic expectations about our practice. And that's another good reason to truly look at what we expect to make us happy. So, what do Buddhist teachings say about happiness? What did the Buddha say about happiness? Does Zen practice really promise happiness, or is it just an assumption that we make? And if there is happiness at the end of the road, the end of the path, what kind of happiness is it? Well, obviously, when the Buddha was focused on the problem of suffering, he was talking about unhappiness along with other kinds of suffering. And he taught that our suffering comes from craving, from wanting things. And a lot of the happiness that we count on in our present time and place comes from other people, other things, experiences. We count on getting love to make us happy, and that depends on others. We like sensual happiness, like from food and exercise and beautiful places, travel. So this is what samsara really is, right? Wanting and not getting it, or getting it and losing it. And it depends on other things outside us. And it's very unstable because when people change, when circumstances change, when the weather changes, then happiness is gone, if that's what we're relying on to make us happy. I imagine everybody here can remember in years gone by, oh, if only I had that job, if only that person loved me, I would be happy forever, right? I'd never want anything more, but it doesn't work that way. It never works that way. We're human. So, if we look outside ourselves for happiness, we're setting ourselves up for more suffering. That's not to say that these experiences aren't wonderful. You know, you can't say, oh, they're not valuable. I mean, what would life be without good food and friends and all of the things that bring us at least some temporary kind of happiness? So, the important thing there is just to be aware that they're transitory, that they won't last. And that alone can help to reduce our suffering. Enjoy them while they're here and let them go. But maybe Buddhism or practice does sort of promise or hold out the possibility of a more stable kind of happiness. So I looked a bit, if you go to the Tricycle magazine website or Lion's Roar or any of those and put in, or just Google Buddhism and happiness. You know, what is happiness in Buddhism? You'll get page after page after page of things. Just for example, in the seven factors of awakening, which are the mental factors that help to build towards awakening, the fourth factor is joy, actual joy that you get from meditation. You know, you may be sitting in meditation, even someone who's fairly new to it, suddenly you just have this feeling of peace where your burdens just kind of drop off. And yeah, I'm happy when that happens. Yeah. But even that is transitory. It doesn't last. And if I expect it to happen again the next time I sit in meditation, it's kind of like the weather, right? I'm probably going to be disappointed. There's also the seventh factor of awakening, which is equanimity. And I'm sure that you've heard some things about equanimity, sort of a calm approach to life, what a lot of people would say is zen-like. You know, you don't take things so seriously that you get caught up in them when they're going to disappear. There's even an opposite of dukkha. You know, dukkha is suffering in Pali. There's something called sukha, which is happiness. So you can read about many of these things in Buddhism, but there's something that I think is a quality that differs from the temporary happiness that we were talking about from people and things and play and objects of desire. And I don't want to get into a lot of teaching that I really don't grasp or haven't investigated fully, but I think that there are some things that we can say about the Buddha, the happiness that we might find in our practice that makes it different from these other kinds of happiness. The first is that this happiness recognizes the reality of suffering. When we're involved in this unstable kind of happiness, we don't want to think about suffering. We just want to think about what feels good to us. And so it's not based on a recognition of the difference between suffering and happiness. And the question is, how can we know what happiness really is if we don't first know what suffering is and where it comes from? And in my experience, the only place we can really look at that is on this cushion here in the Zendo. When we sit in Zazen, we can experience both happiness and suffering with full awareness. We can see our own craving and aversion, which is samsara, being caught up in this cycle of wanting and pushing away. And those are the obstacles that we have to happiness. We can see them clearly if we're aware of them. That's the first thing. The second thing is that it's a more stable happiness because it's based in the qualities and mental habits that are conducive to happiness. It has to be cultivated. It's not something that just appears. We have to kind of set the stage for happiness to come up. Well, what would that involve? That means seeing our actions in the light of what happens afterwards, you know, the results. If we are doing something that harms our physical body or harms ourselves mentally, we can see that it's going to bring us unhappiness. You know? And nobody can give it to us. Nobody, and even though we come here and we hear teachings from Colin and other teachers, they can't make us happy. We have to make ourselves happy. The third thing that I noticed about what Buddhism has to say about happiness is that it's not a self-serving happiness. It's not just happiness for me. It's happiness that is cultivated for the benefit of ourselves, but also for others. Think of our chant on Wednesdays, the Metta Sutta. We say, may all beings be happy. May they be joyous and live in safety. All living beings, whether weak or strong, in high or middle or low realms of existence, small or great, visible or invisible, near or far, born or to be born, may all beings be happy. And I didn't come to Zen practice to make other people happy. Maybe you did, I don't know, that's very nice. But I came because of my own lack of constant happiness, okay? And we can't, don't berate ourselves for wanting to make ourselves happy first. You know, how can you reach out to other people unless you fully explore your own suffering and unhappiness? And then something happens. You know, it, who knows? For each of us, I'm sure it's an individual thing. But at some point you realize you're not alone. You are deeply connected to other people. And that you don't practice, you don't sit on this cushion and go through this, what we have to, it's an arduous task, let's put it clearly. We don't do it just for ourselves, but we do it for others. We want to do it for other people. So this kind of happiness that comes from this cultivation can be a more lasting kind of happiness or a deeper happiness. We first recognize and accept the messiness of life. We become grateful for where we are and what we have, and not always wanting something else or wanting to be somewhere else or focusing on what we lack. That allows us to begin to understand the difference between harmful and beneficial actions, skillful and unskillful, and how we affect other people and beings. We find opportunities to cultivate generosity, kindness, and wisdom. This happens organically when we start to open up to others. We see how the Dharma is reflected in our own lives, and that gives us confidence. If it's not a happiness, at least it's a kind of ease, peace, coming to terms, you want to say, with life, with reality. And we find a way to live knowing that we'll die. I came across something from Thich Nhat Hanh. This is from, I believe it's a book called No Mud, No Lotus, The Art of Transforming Suffering. And it's really about cultivating happiness. He says, the essence of our practice can be described as transforming suffering into happiness. It's not a complicated practice, but it requires us to cultivate mindfulness, concentration, and insight. It requires, first of all, that we come home to ourselves, that we make peace with our suffering, treat it tenderly, and look deeply at the roots of our pain. It requires that we let go of useless, unnecessary sufferings and take a closer look at our idea of happiness. Finally, it requires that we nourish happiness daily with acknowledgement, understanding, and compassion for ourselves and for those around us. We offer these practices to ourselves, to our loved ones, and to the larger community. This is the art of suffering and the art of happiness. With each breath, we ease suffering and generate joy. With each step, the flower of insight blooms. So I thought maybe I would leave you with just a few questions. How do you define happiness? Where do you find it? Since you've begun your Zen practice, has it changed? And how has it changed? And since we know we can't just snap our fingers and be happy, first we have to identify the obstacles to our happiness. So what are the obstacles to happiness for you? I think that's all I have to say. Love to hear comments and questions.